You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Tour de France, in association with RAFA, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we are in Düsseldorf.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in drizzly Düsseldorf.
Nice bit of alliteration to start our coverage of the Tour de France.
I don't want to be downbeat, but it is damp.
Yeah, well, that was Lionel Burney. I'm Richard Moore, and we're joined at this year's Tour de France, delighted to say, by Francois Tomazo.
Hi, guys. With a cap on my head, you know, unlike you guys. Well, probably more used to rain than I am.
Well, I don't think you could look any more Gallic, Francois, but you've managed it today. You've been a regular on the podcast the last couple of years, but you're joining us every day this year, apart from, I think, one day when French labour laws require you to take a day off or go on strike.
Yeah, well, it's not exactly a strike, but normally if I respected French law, I'd be obliged to take a couple of days on during the tour, which I will do, but unfortunately not, to rest and do nothing, but to actually work for not the opposition, but for another company, namely the tour organizers.
Okay, well, we can cope with that when it happens.
When's my day off?
Well, Lionel, today's your special day, of course, isn't it?
It is. It's my birthday. And as the first rider, Elie Gesbert of Fortuneo, the French team.
Fortuneo, the French team, who changed their name overnight.
They did change their name overnight. And you could probably hear the hear the ticker tape in my brain trying to remind me what they've changed their name to.
The French team.
Fortuneo Oscano, is that right?
Well, a rider just rode past us, so well done.
There we are. Perfect advertising for Fortuneo. No longer Fortuneo, but Vital Concept. They've changed the name. Anyway, Elie Gesbert was the first rider down the start ramp at 3:15 this afternoon. It's his 22nd birthday, and they were singing happy birthday to him at the start.
Amazing, because it's your 22nd birthday as well.
I'm 20 years older than
the French rider from the French team.
That's right.
It's a great start. So we're talking... We're talking here as in the middle of the afternoon. The stage has started, but there's still a long, long way to go. So we'll dip in and out. But we thought we'd take this opportunity to introduce Francois, really, because Francois, tell us about for our listeners who are familiar with your voice. Tell us a bit about your background. The first tour you covered was 1986.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did my first tour in 1986. Can't remember where it started because I didn't do the start, actually. I joined the tour in the middle of it in Bagnères de Luchon. It started in Paris, I think, yeah. And the first, you know, I came out of the press room, my first Tour de France, first stage, I came out of the press room, and the first person I met was a guy on a bike with a yellow jersey on called Bernard Hinault. And I told myself, I need to do something about it. So I said, Bernard, and I tried to interview him, and he just pushed me away. That's the way my journalist on the tour career started. So it was a long time ago, because now actually Bernard Hinault has retired, not only as a rider, but as a, how could I say, ambassador of the tour. So yeah, it was a long time ago. And since then, I've done so many tours. I could talk for ages about it, but
well, we're hoping you will. I mean, you've never seen a French victory, having started as a journalist on the tour after the last French win. So you're hoping to see that at some point, I know, in your working life. But you do other things as well. You write novels. Do you still play in a band?
Actually, yes. I played in many bands. 2 years ago, I made two records, and I was planning to tour a little bit with a band and try to make to promote these two records, because I've got two different bands. But the problem is that our rehearsal schedule is pretty tricky, and being on the road on cycling races, you know, very often as well, is not ideal to be a rock and roll star. Yeah, I'm still a musician, but how could I intermittently?
We need to get a bit of Francois's music on in the car as we travel around the Tour de France, don't we?
Well, we're also hoping Francois will do a Com to Zero for us. Our Com to Zero shows go out every weekday morning. We've launched the first one already. It came out on Friday about Düsseldorf. sponsored by Niederberg Wines. Very grateful to them. And Francois, what about the fiction, the writing? You've written crime fiction. You've written about eating and drinking in France as well.
Yeah, I've published nearly 50 books, I think, in French. 15 of those were novels. Most of them crime novels. Most of them based in my hometown of Marseille. And I have another one coming out in March, actually, called Marseille Confidential. You know. Based on the, actually it was funny because I, you know, LA Confidential was written by a guy called James Ellroy. He came to Marseille and I was asked to look after him in his visit to Marseille. We had dinner on one night and a couple of drinks, and he told me, Francois, I looked at your Wikipedia page and I see you've written 50 books, none of them did anything, whereas I wrote just probably 15 and all of them were bestsellers. So I said, yeah, well, what do you recommend? He said, why don't you write Marseille Confidential? So I just did it, and hopefully you won't see me next year on the tour because I'll be a star, you know.
Don't say that, I hope you'll be back. Well, listen, let's go and watch the rest of this time trial. We'll be back in a moment or two.
Just wanted to come here and give it everything and get out there and try and pace it well and go as fast as I could, and yeah, I couldn't have gone any better. You know, I did a decent TT in the Giro and after the crash and everything, so I knew I could do a decent day. It was just about pacing it and getting it all out, and yeah, I think I nailed that. I grew up as a kid watching the tour, and to be the other side of that camera, you know, putting on the jersey is amazing.
I followed Nicholas Roche in the car and ended up binning it, so probably wasn't the best guy to follow today. Just super nervous, but it's just great to start the tour. You know, I think the main thing is to come through without crashing. It was pretty slippery out there, but you know, I can see what happens on the GC. Hard little time trial, dead flat, and you know, those corners and all the lines, you know, you're trying to avoid them. It was you know, quite a mental thing as well.
So where are we now, Lionel?
We are on the other side of Dusseldorf now, outside a restaurant called Malinas, where we've been booked in by our very good friends at modernsalt.co.uk, who are helping to ensure that we don't end up in a buffalo grill.
They've got nothing wrong with a buffalo grill. They've got our best interests at heart.
Yeah, are you allowed to do counter publicity on the Cycling Podcast?
Well,
I mean, Buffalo Grill on there, yeah. You know, they have employees, you know, chefs trying to do their
could
best.
Could be eating our words if Buffalo Grill are sponsoring us around the tour next year. We should probably talk about the cycling, eh?
The Tour
I
of
mean,
France.
We'll be talking a lot about the food as we wend our way around Germany, Belgium, and France. But we are now at the end of the day's stage, and I suppose, well, we heard there at the start from the day's winner, Geraint Thomas, from one of the day's losers, I suppose you could say, Richie Porte as well, but a fantastic day for Geraint Thomas, first ever stage win in a Grand Tour, and obviously his first yellow jersey. Has been close in the past, 2010, I remember, he went very close to the yellow jersey in the Jura Mountains, I think, a day that Sylvain Chavanel won and took the yellow jersey. But let's have the tale of the attack, please, Lionel.
Okay, Richard. Well, stage one of the Tour de France in Dusseldorf, 14-kilometer time trial up and down the River Rhine and over the bridge and round in a circle and back over the bridge again and up the River Rhine. And it's worth remembering that this could have been the London Grand Départ, the second London Grand Départ, 10 years after 2007. But Dusseldorf came through in the end because Boris Johnson, then the Mayor of London, withdrew the city from the race to host this very Grand Départ. So we could have been in London rather than Dusseldorf. We weren't, but we had a British winner, a Welshman, Geraint Thomas, winning, and not the expected home victory for Germany's Tony Martin, who finished quite a surprising fourth in the time trial, which was run off in almost constant rain. It ranged from drizzle to quite heavy rain. There was standing water for some of the riders, particularly the later starters. But Geraint Thomas set the best time. He then had an hour to wait, sitting in the hot seat. He'd taken over the best time from his Team Sky teammate, Vasil Kirienka, and Thomas held firm. Stefan Kung, the Swiss rider with BMC Racing, riding his first Tour de France, he pushed him close. Tony Martin went quite close, finishing in fourth place. Chris Froome, a great ride by him, in sixth place. And he's the big winner in the GC battle, because Froome in sixth there. Simon Yates was 25 seconds behind Froome, Richie Porte 35 seconds behind, and then a succession of riders, Nairo Quintana, Rafał Majka, Thibaut Pinot, Romain Bardet, Fabio Aru, Alberto Contador, and so on, all around 45 seconds down. You said about winners and losers, Rich. It's all relative, because the most unfortunate riders today are, without a doubt, Alejandro Valverde of Movistar. He is out of the Tour de France already. A very heavy crash on a left-hand corner, skidding across the road, hit the barriers, and a reported broken kneecap for him. He's out, as is Jon Izagirre of Bahrain Merida, stage winner, remember, at Morzine in the rainy conditions at the end of last year's tour, but his 2017 tour is already over. Tomorrow, the first road stage, and the speculation will begin. How long can Geraint Thomas hold that yellow jersey?
We don't do speculations, do we? Now, an interesting little factoid that you told us, Francois, because today was not a prologue, but a time trial runoff in rainy conditions, mm-hmm. very similar to 1995.
That's right.
In Brittany, where Chris Boardman was favourite and crashed heavily and was almost run over by his car. And that was him out of the Tour de France that year. But tell us your little factoid.
So, yes, Elie Gesbert was the first guy to start today. Well, I was told by his team manager that, you know, it is one of the great hopes of French cycling. But the most interesting fact, he was born on the July the 1st, 1995, in Saint-Brieuc, in the very place where the time trial took place, that famous time trial in which Chris Boardman crashed, and Jackie Durand, who started in dry conditions, won a time trial for the first and only time in his career.
And we should say the tour start, that was the day of the time trial. I mean, the tour began on the
Absolutely.
So amazing.
So that young kid started a Tour de France time trial at 22 years, you know, after the day of his birth, when a time trial was taking place in his hometown, which is quite
extraordinary. What a fantastic day July the 1st is. My birthday, of course, as
That's
well.
Right.
Princess Diana's birthday it was as well. And Malcolm Elliott, former British rider, winner of the points jersey in the Tour of Spain.
Well, wow. Well.
Extraordinary.
But it's Geraint Thomas's day, isn't it, really? Today, Geraint Thomas, one of the nearly men, I think it's fair to say. He's got two Olympic gold medals. He's dedicated a lot of his career to those targets, and some would say that, you know, that cost him perhaps greater success on the road. The ultimate team man, you know, he will ride for in the service of Chris Froome here at this tour. Has had a lot of bad luck, a lot of crashes, ironically, over the years. And it's nice to see a rider like him, always somebody that is very, very good with us, the press, pretty much very consistent as Geraint Thomas. Just what you see is what you get with him, and I think a popular victory.
Well, especially when you consider that his big target of the year was the Giro d'Italia. He went there as Team Sky's joint leader with Mikel Landa. The first time that he's really had the opportunity to lead in a Grand Tour, and everyone was really looking forward to seeing how he got on with that responsibility. And of course, he didn't really get into the race, did he? Because on the stage to Blockhouse, the police motorcycle pulled up on the roadside and caused that crash in that leading group that Thomas was in. He was one of the worst off in that crash. He battled on for a few days. In fact, he was second in the wine trial behind Tom Dumoulin at Montefalco, which was a terrific ride when you consider he was quite bashed up, and he was more comfortable on his time trial bike than he was actually walking that day. But he only lasted a few more days before the knee pain became a concern for the rest of his objectives this season. He was supposed to be here solely as team support for Chris Froome in what is a fairly awesome looking Team Sky lineup behind Chris Froome. I mean, they've had four riders in the top eight, and of course everyone will ask, you know, what does that mean for the tour, particularly with Richie Porte saying in the week that Team Sky perhaps aren't as strong as they have been in the past. I think today's result shows that that's probably
I completely dismissed Geraint Thomas's chances in this tour last night in the event that we did at Rafa Düsseldorf. Francois, after the event, said that he was going to challenge me on that, and didn't until after he won the
Yeah, because I didn't want to start, you know, our cycling podcast collaboration on a conflicting note. It's always very debatable, but we've seen in the past a rider crash out or ruled out or of a Grand Tour and attempting his chance in the next one. Nairo Quintana winning the Vuelta last year.
Bradley Wiggins at the Vuelta in 2011.
Absolutely, it's happened many times, and in many ways that there is a sense of revenge. But you not only
sometimes don't you lose the form you had for your main objective, but you can build it up and with a little bit sense of revenge on top of it. So Team Sky have probably got their most terrific lineup ever on the Grand Tour. Well, they showed it, and so that's why it's not a surprise to see them so well placed today. But it's an ideal scenario for Chris Froome, because now how long will Garin keep the jersey? Probably very long. I mean, at least until, to me, he'll get to the rest normally without any problem. He should keep the jersey until the first rest day. And
no, really,
I agree with you. But it's we see this so often, don't we? That
La planche de Belfis, it won't be a problem for Garin. So normally you should keep. And I'm not sure Chris Froome has any intention of taking the yellow jersey too early. And the second thing is, we know that Landa is in the form of his life, has been all of the season in the form of his life. It can really, you know, animate the race, make it interesting, while Chris Froome just sits. And if there's a problem as well with and if Chris Froome has a problem, you have two Sky now. Have two options.
I know. I was going to say Landa might just replace Valverde now. No.
Yeah, that's right.
What, move across to Movistar?
He's on his way to Movistar, apparently. So that is a devastating blow, though, for Nairo Quintana and Movistar, and for Alejandro Valverde.
It is. I mean, a horrible crash, a bad injury, reportedly a broken kneecap. I mean, that's a long time out of action, particularly at his age, getting past the mid-30s. I think if he's not 37 yet, he will be 37 this year, born in 1980. That's a big blow for Movistar, and it does rob Nairo Quintana of that second card to play later on in the race. And particularly when you look at the route, and we talked a little bit about this last night at our event at the Rafa Cafe in Dusseldorf, the fact that this could be a kind of a racer's course. Valverde is an excellent racer. He scents out moves. He reads things very well, and that's a big ally lost for Quintana.
Especially as Movistar, outside of Valverde, have never shown great tactical sense or talent. And he was probably even more so than his team directors. I'm great friends with José Luis Arrieta and all these guys. But probably the guys, as you say, who has the most tactical sense in Movistar was Alejandro. So, yeah, big loss for Nairo Quintana for sure.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. It was such a big motivation for me. I couldn't hear my radio. It was so loud. Everybody was shouting for me. So that's the big thing that I take in my mind from here. And with the rest, I mean, it's what I have to live with it. Still 3 weeks to go. Still a few goals to reach. But yeah, first of all, I have to analyze it and yeah, get the best. I mean, I was on the limit at the last 4 kilometers, but that's how it has to be. I missed a bit the power in the last 2 kilometers. I think that's also normal in such a short TT, that you give everything from the start and then you have to see how far you can go. Unluckily, I missed the last 2 kilometers where I couldn't accelerate anymore. That's TT, that's racing.
So we heard there from Tony Martin, the German who, I suppose when this Grand Départ was devised, the dream scenario would have been Tony Martin winning the first stage, taking the yellow jersey, Marcel Kittel following up with a stage win tomorrow.
Or André Greipel.
And before that, we heard a little message from Science and Sport. Very grateful indeed to Science and Sport for their sponsorship. We will be playing some features looking at nutrition throughout this Tour de France, and there'll be other sort of competitions and things through Science and Sport. Listen out for them during the tour in our nightly program. And Tony Martin, disappointed, I guess. I mean, he is, this would have been a sort of world time trial champion. He's had lots of successes, won lots of stages at the Tour de France before, but this would have been something to really savour for him.
Yeah, he's been second in opening time trials at the Tour twice before. Second, I think it was to Rowan Dennis in Utrecht, wasn't it? A couple of years ago?
2015. 15, yeah.
Yeah. he was the hot favourite. Walking around at the start in the rain, talking to various people, and the consensus was that Tony Martin was really the one rider who would push everything.
And riding a Kraftwerk themed bike as well.
Of course, yeah, in Kraftwerk's hometown. Had a lovely paint job on it, didn't it?
Faster Kraftwerk stripes on
it. Yeah, but it wasn't to be. He probably, it's difficult to tell from the screen, and it's difficult to tell when you're talking about 7 kilometres away, but from where I was standing in the rain, it was pretty heavy at the time that Martin was out on course.
A great shame. A Grand Depart is an opportunity for a city to really show its best side, and we did not see the best side of Dusseldorf today, and that's a great pity. You know, the years, the money that go into planning an event like this, and the cost to the race in terms of the spectacle, but also the race itself, the integrity of the race, if you like, because a lot of these GC riders certainly took it very gingerly, they're very cautious. We didn't see the best of them. We saw a lot of riders fall, and you know, riders who were heavily fancied, like Primoz Roglic, for example, one of three Lotto NL Jumbo riders to hit the deck. Luke Durbridge, the Orica Scott rider, also crashed pretty heavily and has apparently damaged ligaments in his ankle, and that's going to be difficult for him. So there's been a cost to the race.
There has. I mean, there was a lot of very tentative cornering. Yonny Zagiri, of course, is out, as we said earlier. A lot of very tentative cornering because you're on city streets. The surface is very nice. It becomes almost like glass when it gets wet. A lot of white lines on the roads, the tram lines as well. Nicholas Roach apparently said on the television that he was disappointed that not all of the tram lines had been filled in or covered over. Stefan Kung, to the press afterwards in the mix zone, said that Richie Port had followed one of the BMC riders earlier on, so he was in the team car.
It was Nicholas Roach.
Actually. It was Nicholas Roach, was it? Yeah. So yeah, Nicholas Roach went down, and so that might have given Richie Port the heebie-jeebies a little bit, thinking, well, the most important thing today is to stay upright. He did say, you know, keep it rubber side down.
I saw him in the car as he came back after that, and he looked quite action-faced, as you said.
Well, it was the tightness of those corners, and the one that caught Valverde out, very wide, a lot of road to play with, but as we saw, absolutely lethal when leaning the bike over.
One of our listeners pointed out on Twitter that had there been pads, had those barriers been padded, Valverde might have been okay, because the damage, injury he suffered.
With what ifs, you know, it's always the same. What I wanted to say about Tony Martin, he probably overdid it, because it was his day, and he said he had, in the last 2Ks, he had no power left, because he said, you know, it's with such a distance, 14Ks, you have to start, you know, very, very heavily, go as fast as you can, and then see what's left in the end, and there was nothing left in the end. And second thing, all these, you know, dates these guys have with their hometown, it never works. Remember London, David Miller, Bradley Wiggins, it didn't happen.
Dumoulin Utrecht
missed out completely. Fabian Cancellara, well, when the race came to Bern, it was not a time trial. He had no chance to take the yellow jersey. The Tour of the Centenary in 2003, a rider we can't name, who was highly favoured to win the opener, it didn't win it. So, you know, these prologue, this first stage rendezvous with glory never happened, actually. And once again, Tony Martin and missed his rendezvous.
Yeah, I noticed the first time check, Geraint Thomas was actually 4 seconds down on Kirianka, his teammate, so it suggests that he paced his ride very well.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Tour de France in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our main sponsor. We did an event, as you mentioned earlier, Lionel, last night at Rafa Dusseldorf.
Very terrific, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. We had friends there. Paul Voss was there, came up on stage for a bit. Ciro Scogna, Emilio, and Rob Hatch as well joined us.
And friends of the podcast can listen to that episode, because we recorded it and we put it out on the Friends of the Podcast feed. If you're not a friend of the podcast, you can sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com. It's £10. There's loads of stuff on there from the year already, and we've got loads more planned, and there's going to be a few tour extras as the
Earlier
race.
This week, in fact, our latest Friends special came out, and that was a conversation with Linus Gerdeman, Daniel Freeb, and Linus Gerdeman in Majorca at Gardermann's new restaurant. Gardermann, 10 years ago, was the next great hope of German cycling, won a stage and took the yellow jersey.
10 years ago, Geraint Thomas rode the Tour de France for the first time.
That's
the,
right.
The youngest rider in the field.
He was. He finished second last overall. He was riding for Barlow
he
World.
He was 21.
He was 21, the youngest rider in the field, yeah.
And said that already.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, we've drunk my birthday beer, my one birthday beer, at record pace.
Yeah, yeah. That affects, yeah. I was going to say something else about Rafa, sorry, because I should tell our listeners about Rafa Rising. Rafa are celebrating climbing throughout July with various ride challenges, prize competitions and events at their clubhouses. I'll tell you a bit more about them throughout our tour coverage. But cycling podcast listeners are being offered by Rafa the chance to win £1,500 worth of cycling kit. Visit rafa.cc/TCPwin and answer the following question. Well, you can go on there and find the question. I'm not going to read the question out now, although I might in a future episode, but go to rafa.cc/TCPwin and enter the competition. It closes on the 23rd of July.
For that amount of kit, I'd crawl over broken glass to find out the question.
Well, or you can just click on the website, Lionel.
Yeah, it's just far less painful.
Anyway, we're about to finish our day one coverage of the Tour de France, our first of our nightly podcasts.
We'll get in the swing of things, won't we, as the race goes on. It's been a slightly disjointed day, I felt.
I always think time trials are going to be great because on paper there's a chance to walk around and talk to riders, and in reality it doesn't really happen.
You talk to everybody except riders, because riders, before they do the time trial, they're stressed, and after they've done the time trial, especially when it rains, the only thing they care about is going back to the hotel as soon as possible.
Yeah.
So it's the worst thing to do. I was telling Lionel, I think I know why Geraint Thomas won this, because he was not a favourite for today's stage, so he didn't have to take that as many risks as the guys who were going for the stage win. And he's not a GC contender, so he didn't have to be as cautious as the GC contenders. So it was just the right balance. He was the guy who, you know, didn't keep a little bit of his strength for the GC, and in the same time, he didn't take some of the, probably didn't start as hard and didn't pull as hard as Tony Martin and the other specialists. And in the end, there you are, perfect balance, perfect timing, perfect pacing. You win the stage.
Certainly, it's not something I thought about before today's stage at all, which is remiss when you think about second place in that time trial recently. He's a very good rider in this sort of event.
He is, and he's got that track pedigree as well, and the distance is probably just in that sweet spot, almost like a Venn diagram you're talking about there, Francois, where he wasn't one thing or the other, and he could just do them ride through the middle, not having to push but not having to conserve, and probably got a bit lucky with the conditions as well. But I mean, it's a long time since he's won a time trial. It was 2014 at the Bayern Rundfahrt, just as my second birthday beer arrived.
In Germany, so there's a German
exactly
connection.
So
yeah.
did you mention he's making history as the first Welshman to hold the yellow jersey, I suppose?
I mean, he made a lot of, having watched the British and Irish Lions play a game called rugby this morning. apparently this is a game that people play.
All right, okay. We're allowed to, we're allowed the football and cricket references, but not the rugby. Right. A superior game, some would argue.
But of course, nobody around this table is arguing that at the moment, are they? But no, I mean, it's a lovely story, though, isn't it? Because, he has so often had bad luck. Even the year, Francois, you were asking... no, sorry, our colleague Tom Carey from The Telegraph, getting confused about who I've been talking to today. I mean, the tour, honestly, listeners, the tour will settle down. It will settle into a groove. But Tom Carey mentioned the 2013 tour where Geraint Thomas broke a bone in his pelvis, didn't he?
Yeah, in Corsica, yeah.
And battled all the way through the race. I mean, as hard as nails, really, to get through that race. You know, he has been pretty unlucky with... Yeah. He's crashed in the Tour of Flanders when he's been really on song. Obviously, the Giro this year, not his fault, but,
I have no reason to be a fan of Geraint Thomas. I'm French, he's Welsh, there might be Celtic, ties there somewhere. But he's one of the... he's really one of the great guys in the peloton. We all know what a potential he has, what a talent he has, and we're discussing with Richard on the finish line. He's too nice. It's probably his problem. He's been too kind. He doesn't have that grinta, as the Spaniards say. But when you look at his record now, I mean, because he's held yellow jerseys in the past, he won Paris-Nice, which is something. He was British champion. He had a British champion jersey. He was Commonwealth champion, which is something. He was Olympic champion. Now he's got a yellow jersey. Lots of guys would be happy with such a career, actually. But you can't help thinking he could do even more.
I love that. He's Commonwealth champion, which is something.
a little something.
It's a collective. Just in case you don't know, Francois, or any foreign listeners who aren't part of the Commonwealth, which apparently is a magnificent thing again, isn't it?
you don't have much choice now. You're choosing the Commonwealth over Europe. I mean, yeah, that's, you know. But anyway,
I remember trying. I remember we shouldn't stray into these kind of areas. Not on day one. We don't want to turn people off immediately. But trying to describe the Commonwealth to Europeans. It's a collection of nations that all speak English, but not all of them. It's a collection of nations.
It's a magnificent event, the Commonwealth Games. I want to hear a word said against it.
The bowls competition is my favourite.
That's wonderful. And we shouldn't, you know, we don't want to have another. We had a massive argument in the car earlier about whether Matteo Trentin was a bunch sprinter or not.
We don't want to go there. But what I will say is, talking about Geraint Thomas and you know how long he could keep the yellow jersey. Tomorrow's stage finishes in Liège, finishes on the Boulevard de la Sauvonnière, which is where in 1987 Moreno Argentine caught up Stephen Roach and Claude Criquillon, who had been away for quite a long time since the climbs, and they looked like they'd got the race sewn up. And
Liège-Bastogne-Liège, that is.
Liège-Bastogne-Liège, yes, sorry. And Argentine caught them in this in the final straight. This was when it finished. It's down by the river, isn't it? Near the centre of the city, but not quite the centre of the city. This is obviously long before the finish up in Ans that they have now. But talking about the script that you were talking about, Francois, and how the idea was that Tony Martin would win the prologue and Marcel Kittel would do... Sorry, prologue. I mean, where am I? What am I in the 90s? It's not the prologue anymore, is it, when it's over 7.6 kilometres or whatever the rule in the UCI?
Call it the opener or whatever.
Yeah. But the script was Tony Martin wins today. Marcel Kittel, a very good time trialist in his own right on a pan flat course, would do well enough to be within striking distance. The time bonuses would then give him a chance of taking the yellow jersey. But Kittel is 16 seconds down. There's only 10 seconds available on the line. So it all plays into Geraint Thomas's hands, particularly with the finish at the Citadel at Longwy on Monday. So yes, we always do this. On the first day of the tour, we look for the patterns, you know, what's going to unfold in the coming days. We think we know. We're probably wrong.
Speaking of Marcel Kittel, I spoke to Mark Cavendish at the finish. He was in a very chipper mood, Mark Cavendish. I succeeded in turning his mood significantly darker, as you'll hear in the interview. It was quite entertaining. Here he is, Mark Cavendish. How was it today just to be riding the tour after the season you've had?
I'm happy, actually. Just today. Good luck, man. No, I'm super happy. That was Andre Greipel.
It's nice. The sprinters wishing each other luck.
He sent me a message to say hope get well, you know. He's a good guy. Like, everyone's all right, really. No, I was all right. Honestly, I spoke to Peter earlier. I said, oh, I'm glad I'm here. Like, I wouldn't have liked watching on TV, that's for sure. No matter what happens, I'm glad to be here, really.
You seem very happy. You seem in a good mood. You seem happy to be here.
Well, it's because I'm just... I'm just relaxed. It's the most relaxed I've ever been coming in the tour. Like, normally I've done everything I can, so I know that I'm coming in to win. And if I don't win, I'll be pissed, you know? That's normal. Well, this year, like, I know exactly where I'm at, and so actually I'm not disappointed if I don't win this year.
So you got nothing to lose, but a chance tomorrow?
Yeah, there's a chance in every sprint. There's a chance. Chance of the 200 bike rider or the bike riders. But yeah, of course, like, as a sprinter, you can choose the right wheels or you could get lucky, you know, and so you could just try, really.
But from a health point of view now, there's no reason why you can't be the Mark Cavendish that we all know tomorrow.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, you're kidding me. I've been training 6 weeks. What do you expect, Richard? I'm a Superman, like, you know.
But you must be confident that you know that you can be up there.
Well, not really. Like, I'm not a... I'm a realist. Like, it's like this thing, Richard, you know, where people... You know where I talk about when I say, well, I'm the fastest, and people, oh, he's big-headed. Well, no, it's just stating a fact. And it's the same right now. I know I'm firing nowhere near my best, so I'm not living in a fairyland. I know what's realistic, and I'm going to need luck to win something. But we got a strong team here for everything else.
So that was Mark Cavendish. I started off very chipper and got a bit annoyed with some of my questions. But
he told me today I've got the most awkward walk in cycling.
Yeah, he was in a funny mood, and he is here because he can win a stage. Otherwise, he wouldn't be here, you know. And that was what I was getting at. I think I don't know if he knows how he's going to fare when it comes to, you know, a bunch sprint. But, you know, I think Cavendish, if he's healthy again, he's capable of winning a stage, isn't he?
But is his humor a marker of it, of his form? You know, that's a question. Because usually when he's in a good mood, he loses, and when he's a bad mood, he wins.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Well, we don't know, do we? That's speculation. What the next few days are going to
tell
us.
Well, let's go in. Let's go and have dinner, chaps, and get some birthday cake for you at the end of the night, Lionel. Hopefully, sing happy birthday again.
Not again. I mean, they sang it to me on the start line down in Düsseldorf.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, you know,
that was lovely.
Happy birthday to you.
Wow.
Happy birthday, dear Lionel. Happy birthday to you.
And on that very musical note, let's end it. Thank you very much, Francois.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.